It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guest is UK author Lucy Nicol. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I discovered you through a book that came out this year called Snowflake, Breaking Through Mental Health Stereotypes and Stigma, a book that I thoroughly enjoyed. I love the way that you sort of tell us to just educate ourselves. That's all we have to do. We don't have to stick with what we thought we knew. We can just learn by the progressive society, can't we?
Exactly. It's not about slapping wrists. It's about just taking a moment to pause and think about, is what you're saying so precious and important to you that you would rather say it regardless of how it might impact somebody else? Because really, when we think about it, these like words and things that we get so hung up about because of tradition, at the end of the day, why? Why is that word so important to us? You know, if a word gets bleeped out of a song because it has offended people, why are we so upset about that? I don't think it changes our lives dramatically. So yeah, it's about kind of saying, come on, let's just look at this. Let's look at mental health stigma, see how it affects people and not get so hung up on words being stolen from us.
Indeed. Now, we will get onto your novels, but just very quickly, because obviously as a filmmaking podcast, it's interesting that you're passionate about challenging mental health stigma as an individual, and you've worked with charities and stuff, but you've also worked on providing script advice for soaps and dramas regarding mental health. Do you want to talk about what that involves in terms of what you're able to do to help a drama sort of get things right?
Yeah, that's a brilliant role to get. So I was I met Jenny Regan, who was heading up the media advisory desk for Mind. And because I had a background in kind of the arts, and I was working and writing a lot in mental health, so I'd seen numerous scripts when I worked in theatre and stuff. She said, would you be interested in joining the team as a freelance script advisor? I said, absolutely. And it's such a brilliant and interesting way of working. So basically, it's not about being delivered some kind of final script of a soap opera and marking it in red pen.
Okay.
It's not about that. The majority of the time, we would be having conversations with story editors, researchers, etc. Way back at the start of the process. So one of the best storylines I worked on was for Coronation Street, and it was a character called Carla Connor, who they wanted to explore the experience of psychosis that she would experience, not because she was diagnosed with schizophrenia, which is what we often associate psychosis with, but because she'd been through extreme trauma and depression. So a lot of these things combined, resulting in a breakdown and a psychotic break. And they were talking to us right from the beginning. So on that storyline, I actually worked with Coronation Street for about 7 or 8 months.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So it's it's very much a collaborative process. So, you know, we'd throw ideas around. They'd come back to us with like the story beats. If there was something that I felt didn't sit right because it might have been stigmatizing, I'd discuss that with them. Mm. If there was something, for example, with legal implications, like, you know, a section under the Mental Health Act, I would have access to Mind's legal team to make sure that everything is, you know, correct. If we needed to talk about treatment or medication, I'd have access to Mind's info team. So, yeah, it's just an absolute fascinating project. And I worked on EastEnders and Corrie and Hollyoaks and Strike and BBC Drama Industry, all sorts of things.
What's the portrayals of mental health and therefore trying to avoid the stigmatized of mental health do you see in a general sense in drama that's easily avoided that, for a filmmaker listening in, they could take as advice if looking at a script themselves they're doing?
One thing that is best to avoid at all costs, and I think this, you read this in Samaritan's guidelines, but in so many media guidelines for any mental health charity, is methods of suicide that can be very triggering for people and very upsetting for people. And it's just, it's not something that you want to risk any kind of copycat, yeah. I suppose. You know? So if you were talking about a place where people were taking their own life, and if this was in nonfiction, for example, and it was a place where that happened, that would be quite irresponsible. So suicide is something I think we shouldn't avoid. We need to talk about suicide and suicidal ideation, but I think methods of suicide are something to stay away from, or at least not to show explicitly. But then I think there's so many things around. Psychosis is always very stigmatized. You always get people who are, they might show somebody who commits a criminal act who has experienced psychosis. Well, actually, the majority of people, psychosis are very vulnerable. And that's what I loved about the Coronation Street storyline, is that they took a very assertive character. Carla Connor's a very assertive, confident character. And so what they showed was how psychosis made her more vulnerable. So I think that's exploring the vulnerability of it and trying to move away from sensationalizing. And I think, to be honest, I think it's more powerful in those ways as well. And I think also making sure, if you're writing scripts or books or whatever, that you do, I don't really like the term sensitivity reader, but authenticity reader. It's like what I was doing, obviously, with Mind. We would often have people with lived experience who we might introduce to an actor or a writer or a director who would be able to comment on, you know, how might I feel. So if an actor's exploring how they might portray something, they can talk to someone, how might you feel in that moment? What might you be doing? What might your body language be like? So I think that having lived experience involved in a collaborative way in the process is absolutely key.
You're a prolific writer, Lucy, if you don't mind me saying. The last few years, there's obviously Snowflake I've mentioned, but in 2021 you get the 27 Club, which is your first Emma and Dave story. Humorous tale of music, myths, mental health and friendship. And then you follow that up in 2022 with the sequel, Park Life. Now you've got your novel, No Worries If Not, from available from HarperCollins. So jump into your latest one. Give us a brief synopsis to what that's about first.
Yep. So No Worries If Not is about one woman's mission to break up with the word sorry. So that's my elevator pitch. So basically, Charlotte is, she's a young woman, late 20s. She realises that she constantly apologises for everything.
Yeah.
And there's a turning point, there's a pivotal moment, which I'll not spoil, but where she realises she is literally apologising for being a woman. And she's like, that's it, no more. But it's a rom-com. So in true rom-com style, there is a man. there is a will they, won't they. There's lots of kind of missed opportunities and miscommunications, and, you know, so there's a lot of fun there. So it's got friendship, it's got dodgy dates, it's got, you know, office culture, got Newcastle because it's set in the Toon. But it's essentially a bit of a feminist novel. It's got a feminist message, and it's about women not apologizing for taking up space, not over apologizing, but also kind of exploring, like, you know, it's not about being, trying to think of a word that isn't a swear word.
You're allowed to swear if you want. There's no censorship on the podcast.
I was going to say, it's about not being a total, I can't think of anything apart from the worst word. Basically about not being a horrible person.
Okay.
And looking at the balance and when there is a place for apologizing in life. But certainly not if somebody bumps into you or stands on your foot. You know, the fact we're constantly saying, I apologize before I have a great idea that I'm going to share with you. Or I apologize because I'm asking you to move your man spreading legs. So that's a little from the book. So yeah, so it's got a bit of a feminist punch to it, but it's ridiculous and silly and funny. And
so when you start a book like that, what do you remember being the kernel of the idea that got you, set you off on the journey to the book we can now see in the book on the bookshelves?
Well, if you want me to be completely honest, it was my smear test.
Okay, carry on. Tell me more.
The thing is, I've kind of blocked myself here because I can't really, because I don't want to give it away.
Okay.
There's a pivotal moment in the book, but it was something that I realised. And funnily enough, when I mentioned this to a few people, they said, I have apologised about that at a smear test as well. And it's nothing horrible. It's just quite funny, and it's just hilarious that women feel they have to apologize for it. Oh, and the whole no worries if not thing, obviously the title, like ending every email with no worries if not. And my God, I did that so many times. I've stopped doing it since I've written the book. I don't think I've done it once. But we say it, and it's like giving people a get out clause. It's like giving them permission to turn you down for something. And the funny thing is that we do it sometimes when we feel like we're asking a favour of somebody. Mm-hmm. You can kind of get. But then I've had friends like send me a message asking me if I fancy going out for a drink or something, which is a lovely thing. No worries if not. No? So I do find that quite amusing.
When you're writing your novels, what's your process in terms of developing a story? Are you a get up in the morning and, you know, catch the get the worm and everything, or are you a late night owl? Or
I don't have one, if I'm completely honest, and I've written books totally differently. So like when I wrote 27 Club, it started out with literally no plan, just here's a hook concept, it's going to be about mental health, it's going to link to the 27 Club, and I just start writing and see what comes out. And then I mean, with that, I actually had a manuscript assessment from an established writer very early doors before I'd barely, I'd only written about chapters or something. Whereas when I wrote Park Life, it was completely the other way around, and I'd thoroughly plotted it out. I'd prepared everything, you know, I knew exactly what I was going to be writing. With No Worries If Not, I wrote the pivotal scene first, which is chapter 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I don't really have a process that I use. It's just whatever my brain tells me to do. And in terms of mornings or nights, depends how I've slept. I'm perimenopausal, sometimes I am not that awake in the morning. it depends how fired up my brain is as to when I'm best writing. But getting out of the house is a really good thing for me, especially going to the coast. I love going to the coast and writing.
Well, look, thank you for sharing that. And No Worries If Not from HarperCollins is out 3rd of August. Hopefully by the time this goes live, it will already be out and people can get it. I'll put a link in the show notes so people can find it easy enough. And without further ado, let us move into the film portion of the podcast, which is three films that have impacted everything in your adult life. Are you ready for this, Lucy?
I am, yes.
Brilliant. Now, I'm going to remind people of the rules. And the rules, that sounds very dramatic. Basically, we've got three films that Lucy's very kindly shared with me. I'm going to do them in the order you gave them me. We're going to talk about each one for 5 minutes. And then when 5 minutes are up, we will hear this sound. And that's the sound of 5 minutes ending. And then we move on to the next film. That sounds simple enough.
Great.
Starting us off in 2004, we've got, written by Charlie Kaufman, directed by Michel Gondry, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind from 2004. Do you want to tell us where this features? Is it impacting on your life and how you saw it, etc.?
I think it's just the idea of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So it's basically about there's a couple, they break up, and she's called Clementine, she's played by Kate Winslet, and she's very impulsive, and she hears about a way that she can, because she's so devastated, she can just wipe Joel from her mind. Joel, played by Jim Carrey, she can just wipe him from her mind to take the pain away, I suppose. So she's wiping all of the memories, everything from her mind. And I just think it's such an interesting idea. You know, would you choose to do that? Would you choose, even if, you know, if you had a great love, or if you had a pet that you loved and that you lost them, would you rather not have any of those good memories because of that heartbreak at the time? So I thought it was a really interesting one. I saw it at the cinema, actually, with an ex-boyfriend, and I'll never forget him saying, I was telling my husband about this the other day, he actually said to me, there's a line in it where Clementine is chatting to Joel, and Joel says, constantly talking is not necessarily communicating. And I remember my ex saying, that's you, that is. But yeah, my husband agrees. So there's something in the film that I very much relate to. But I think, let's get deeper, on a deeper level. I just think it's such an interesting concept. And in fact, I remember, it might have been my dad, somebody saying to me, I don't know if I want to get any more pets because it's too heartbreaking.
Okay.
Because obviously live as long as us, do they? So you are going to lose pets. You're going to have to say goodbye to them.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
And it's that thing you think, well, would I rather not have them in my life to avoid that upset? Or would I rather enjoy the company of living with animals? So you can look at it, as much you can look at it with, you know, the great loves of your life, whatever it may be. Would you rather get rid of the memory to avoid the heartbreak? I think it's an interesting question.
No, without a doubt. And also, it didn't dawn on me till looking at it as when somebody gives you a list of films, you tend to reassess them, even if you know them really well. I'd never thought about, I focused on The Spotless Mind, and I just, then it just dawned on me, the idea of cleaning up your head. Like, how great that would be. But then, like you say, everything gone, that's not because there's happy. I mean, and you because you tweet a lot about music and stuff, and I think we have similar kind of, generationally speaking, similar. I remember reading Kim Gordon's book, Girl in a Band.
Oh, I've not. Yes.
Oh, and the thing is, you read it, and it's the story of someone actually ask. I mean, it feels really weird, and maybe I was imposing it on it, but it feels like somebody going, A, did he ever love me? And B, was this band fun at any point? Because when did he stop loving me? Was kind of the subtext of the book as I read it. Because it's one of my favourite bands, and I was expecting this kind of like, wasn't it great being in this band? Da, 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 da. And then suddenly you read the story, you go, yeah, it fucked me over. And now I can't trust any of my memories, which is kind of what, I guess, what Kaufman... And Kaufman's a very interesting writer because he's constantly... Because film is a very external experience because it's what we see and what we hear. And obviously what goes in our mind is very internal. And he manages to make films that get the mind out into the out onto the screen, for want of a better expression.
Yes, it's so kind of fragmented. You do get a little bit lost, but that's because it's somebody's, you know, we're going inside someone's mind in their memories and we're kind of dipping in and out of them. And, you know, and I think there's like one of the key messages in it is that you can't completely erase somebody because if you've been in love, it will have changed you in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
So there will always be something of them that you take with them, even if you can't remember what that is. There'll always be something you've learnt or some way you've changed because we're all changing constantly.
And if you got rid, and if you got rid of that, would that mean that you'd regress? I mean, because you've not got that lesson that you learn, even if it was a horrible one to learn, but you still moved you forward. That feels scary to me. I mean, that's maybe what... Oh, there's our 5 minutes.
Yeah.
No, I mean, because it's... You know, one of the things I remember learning first time around on sort of screenwriting was screenplays are meant to make sense, real life doesn't. And I think that what Charlie Kaufman manages to do really well is he manages to get a little bit of that chaos of what... Or the pretense of chaos of real life in and amongst the narrative, which obviously still has to work itself out. You can't just...
It makes us question ourselves. It's so provocative. It really makes you question yourself. Absolutely. I think. Yeah.
Right then. Number two choice, Lucy, is 1978. Now, I didn't know who wrote and directed this. This has been a little... Because I saw this at the cinema myself as a kid. So Bronte Woodard wrote it, and it was directed by Randall Kleiser. I am, of course, I say of course, like not everybody will know this, Grease from 1978. Now, this story, I believe, is not necessarily the happy story of a film watching thing from what you previewed for me when you messaged about this one.
So I think with Grease, because we're saying films that have impacted all of our adult lives, we didn't say that have positively impacted all of our adult
lives. No, that's, and let's be honest, what we've just, conversation we just had, it's clear, not every experience is a good one.
Exactly, yeah. So Grease. So I was absolutely obsessed with Grease as a kid, to the point of we were doing it as a play in the garage every single day of the school holidays. I was playing Sandy. My friend Philippa was playing Danny. She even wrote T-Birds on the back of her jacket. We were pretending to smoke.
Superb.
Yeah, I think she stole some cigarettes from her uncle. So we thought this is so cool. This is the way we need to be. This is how we need to grow up. And then you reflect on it and you're like, oh my God, how much has that film, and it won't be the only one, how much has that film and so many others totally given us this anti-feminist message that we have to change who we are to be accepted and to be. And to find a boyfriend, basically, that's what it's saying, isn't it? So, you know, you've basically got somebody who, all of her friends, everybody around her, everybody around Sandy is saying, if you want Danny Zuko, you're going to have to wear different clothes. You're going to have to speak differently. You're going to have to perm your hair. You're going to have to smoke cigarettes. And that's how you're going to get your man. And it's just such an absolutely awful, toxic message. But I think when I think about the years that I loved it and how much I did love it and how much time, I mean, honestly, I sat with another friend, Claire, and we wrote, we kept pausing the video so we could write the script, so we could perform the film in full. We never did.
Yeah.
But that's how obsessed we were with it. And yeah, I just think, my God, you think of the things that we think today are wrong, you know, oh God, how dare we say the F word and blah, 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 blah. Really, what harm does that do? But films like Grease, honestly, I think if we sat a 12-year-old down in front of Grease today and got them to watch it, I think that would do a lot more damage.
Out of interest, when was your great awakening then to this film that you loved so much?
I think it probably happened over time.
Yeah.
I think probably, I don't even know if it was in my 20s. Do you know what I mean? Because I think that's the thing, where it has impacted me. I think I behaved in certain ways. I remember, in fact, as I was growing up, I was really into it. We're talking about that kind of music, Sonic Youth, and, you know, Hole and Nirvana and going to Spiders nightclub in Hull.
Yeah.
And I was single for quite a while when I was younger. And I thought, what I need to do to find a boyfriend is to change all of this and to dress up in high heels and to go to this really crappy nightclub called Position, where they play R&B music. And that is how I'm going to find a boyfriend, by looking, dressing, dancing and behaving like a girl. And of course, now I've found my confidence again because I'm older. Like, sod that. Like, as if. I'd never wear heels. I'm much happier in trainers or Doc Martens. I'm just, you know, sitting here in a baggy jumper and baggy jeans and listening to the music that I really love. And so I do think that throughout my life, I have tried to fit into things to be accepted. And I think Grease, it's not the only reason. Society as a whole has, you know, made women especially, I think.
Yeah.
Think they have to behave in a certain way or look a certain way. But Grease very much plays into that narrative, without a doubt. So I think, you know, I'm not going to say it's something that, oh, I turned 18 and realised it was wrong. No, much, much further down the line. And I think it still affects me now. To some degree, I'm sure in some way it does.
I mean, not nearly as toxic, but if you think about what the message it sends to young men, because obviously he was in love with her when he wasn't in the hometown and he was this nice, yeah, sweet guy. And then when he comes back, he has to be a twat and he has to be all cold and not, yeah, love is not for men.
Exactly.
don't be in love. You can shag her if you want, but that's,
yeah,
and you can tell us all about it, but don't be, yeah, falling in love. That's not what.
Oh, that's an interesting part to end on. Yes, the whole toxic masculinity side of it. Absolutely. I mean, I'm seeing it through my eyes, but
yeah, it's only because you're basically. I mean, a lot of the John Hughes films do it as well. Is that it's about the tenacity of the man.
Yeah,
to not accept no, whereas obviously no means no, mm-hmm, has been a message that's come through, not, yeah, necessarily getting through to everybody, but certainly it's an accepted message,
yes,
in modern society now. But if you look at those 80s films, no meant, well, I've not done the right poem, or I've not played her the right song.
Yeah,
and you're yeah, saying for a woman is like, well, I haven't dressed myself right to appeal to what he wants.
Exactly.
Which is such a bizarre way to go about.
Absolutely awful. Yeah, yeah. That's one of the things I love about getting older. You know, I'm 45 now and I'm just so much more comfortable in my own skin. I feel more like the 15-year-old I wanted to be if I wasn't so shy and socially anxious and full of low self-esteem because of these sorts of films.
Well, it'd be interesting then to talk about the next film, which is directed by Superman's Richard Donner and written by, I mean, his parents must be having a laugh, written by Chris Columbus. I mean, I'm guessing he's Christopher Columbus as reality, so why you would call your kid that, I don't know. But anyway, I'm talking about 1985's The Goonies, which, if I'm right, from my last rewatch, I think that's survived intact.
I think it has.
Whereas, you know, Grease might have fallen by the wayside with some of its sexual politics, but I don't know if The Goonies has fallen by the wayside. I mean, tell us your, like, where you see this and how it becomes important to you.
The Goonies, I rewatch every so often. So it might be every couple of years or something, I'll rewatch The Goonies. And do you know what it is to me? It's just a reminder that life can be an adventure. Mm. It sounds so corny, but it's so true, that life can be fun and can be an adventure. And you just have to make it that way. And you don't have to become serious, boring grown-ups. Like, who wants to be one of those?
I don't.
I think there's something about when you hit your 30s, you feel like you're preparing to be grown up and sophisticated, and you know. And I think that for me, that was my most boring part of my life, where I dressed in a boring way and, you know, listened to boring music and, you know, and trying to be a grown up.
Yeah.
And I just think when you get to a certain age and you can just think, actually, no, I want to go on fairground rides now. I want to like run around Cragside Gardens and imagine what it's like if there were like witches and, you know, witchcraft. And I let your imagination run wild. And I just think the Goonies is just such a gorgeous, innocent kind of adventure.
Yeah.
That reminds us that, you know, the fact that I'm 45 and I enjoy it possibly even more now than I did when I was a kid, because it just reignites that in you, I think. It's just from start to finish, it's just, and the joy.
I was going to say, is there any particular sequence that you particularly like rewatching?
This is the first one that's bringing to mind. It's not so much about liking rewatching it, but I just think there's something, they capture something at the end, you know, when they all come out and they, you know, there's the press and the guy from the council and all their parents are there and all the kids are talking over each other because, oh my God, they're so excited because this has happened and that's happened and that's happened. And that's what you like when you're young. I mean, obviously I didn't have a real life pirate ship. I probably imagined it, or, you know, we might just get excitable over something and playing in the woods and, you know, pretending we had a base and there were, I don't know, whatever you did as
kids.
But it's just about finding those things, isn't it, in life now, like finding those little magic moments and kind of like just letting them wash over you, like enjoying them. Pausing and enjoying them and not taking everything so seriously. And I do think I'm embracing like the kid that I was more so now than I have in my 20s and 30s. It's like when you get on a bike. I mean, there's a scene where they all like jump on their bikes. I think they've tied the big brother Brandon to the chair with his exercise stuff, and they all jump on their bikes and head away. And you can remember that feeling of absolute freedom. And so me and my husband bought some bikes recently, some secondhand bikes off a community Facebook group. And I just remember like getting on them and just riding down near Gosforth Park, we were riding down this like hill, and just how like free and liberating we felt. Like, we didn't care what we looked like, you know, it was just, my hair was flying behind me. I was just going as fast as I could. I could have fallen off at any moment. Did not want to slow down. And it was just remembering that feeling of anything could happen. And it's something as well, I think, about having things mapped out for you. Because I don't think you have to have everything mapped out.
Please finish that thought.
Yeah, I still like to think that anything could happen. I've still got many years in me, I hope. And I don't like to think that everything's mapped out. I don't want to work to some boring plan. And as kids, we certainly don't. And the Goonies had no idea what they were. They were going off on an adventure, following some old map and seeing what happened. And it was, it's just so much fun, wasn't it?
Indeed. I mean, coincidentally, I've recently bought the Blu-ray of it because my wife has never seen it.
Oh my God.
So I'm going to have the joy of watching it with someone who's never seen it before.
That'll be very special. That'll be really special. Yeah. It's brilliant. A brilliant film. And there's a few others I could have chucked in there, like quite different, but the fun of Lost Boys, when you've got like the Frog Brothers. I can't remember the name of Corey Haim's character, but the three of them together, like on a serious mission. I mean, they are, because there are actual vampires in Lost Boys, but doing that as kids, you know, like conjuring something up and on a mission to deal with it. Just brilliant.
Indeed. Well, look, Best of luck with the release of No Worries If Not. I'm sure you're going to be a ripping success. And it just gives me to say thank you very much. Give you time on the Britflix podcast.
Thank you. It's been a blast. It's been fun.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.